I'm going to read you something that's not up there, and we'll go to that in just a minute. But this is the consecration that Jesus did. This is from Rogers, taking the four Gospels, putting them together. And if you've ever read each of the four Gospels, they all have an account, except John, of the institution of the Lord's Supper. So I'm going to read this part, just a few sentences. Here we go. And as they were eating, Jesus took bread, and having blessed, he broke it, gave it to his disciples, and said, "Take, eat. This is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." Then in like manner, he also took the cup after supper, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, "Drink from it, all of you." And they drank from it. And he said to them, "This cup is the covenant in my blood, which is poured out for you. For this is my blood of the new covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. But truly I say to you, I will no longer drink the fruit of this vine until the day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom, the kingdom of God." I'd like to invite kids to come down if you would. That's good. Keep squeezing. You know, get on the one spot. Squeeze together. It's okay. You're going to sit over there? And I'll move this so you can still see me a little bit. All right. Do any of you have a special meal you like? You know, what's the meal you like? Oh, what's the meal you like?
Steak.
Tough lady to please there. All right, here we go. Another one.
Spaghetti.
Good. Another one. Sushi. Woofta. Pizza. What do you usually get to eat on Thanksgiving?
Turkey.
A turkey. What do you usually get to eat on Christmas? Do you have a special meal and thing? You get steak at Christmas? I don't know.
I love steak.
You like steak? That's good. Steak's good. All right. Come on, next weekend. There we go. Good. Well, this thing we're going to talk about today in the sermon is a meal that Jesus gave to his disciples. Now, it may not be exactly what you would like, but I'm going to give you a chance, if you want, to taste a little bit of the things that go into this meal. All right? This is what's called unleavened bread, and you can take a little bit of a piece of it. It's like a cracker. If you don't want any, don't take any. You want to taste it? Okay. You can just take it off and break off a piece. Good. It won't hurt you. It tastes a little bit like a cracker. There you go. Take a little piece or a big piece. There you go. There's more. You can take and come up after church and taste more if you want. Break one off. Just break a little off. Or take a small one. It might be easier. Don't add a girl. Try not to touch them all. There we go. Good. That's unleavened bread. Yeah. And this next one that was part of the meal is what we call the main part. It's a little bit like steak. No? Yes, no? That's good. Give it a try. Give it a try. Did I give you a piece? Yeah, good. No? Yes, no? It's okay. That's all right. Good. Feel free to say no. See if they like steak. You should like this. There you go. You know what that is? That's the lamb. In the Passover, they have a lamb that they have to roast over a fire, and that's the lamb. One of the other things that they have is what's called bitter herbs. You don't have to take it if you don't want, but grab a piece if you want. Just don't throw it on the floor. That's all right, honey. Just put it up on the table. Just on the table, not back in the dish. Right there, right on the table. No. Yeah, on the table. Perfect. Anyone want to try? This is parsley and cilantro.
You don't like that, Levi?
Well, wait. He'll find out. Don't tell him what he doesn't like yet. Yes? No? You guys are doing really good. A lot of brave kids here. Yes? No? No? Yes? Okay. Are you up for the wine? Well, there is wine up here. And if you want, you can ask your mom and dad at the end of the service to come up and let you taste some. Because when they did this Passover meal, even the littlest of kids, how do the bitter herbs taste? Bitter, right? Are they making your mouth go bruh? Good. Eventually, I'll collect it all back. Just set it right on the chair if you don't want it. Put it right on the chair. It'll be fine. Good. Are you rescuing us with some napkins? Thank you. No, they're doing okay. Surprisingly so. You're okay. Well, now you know what the things they were supposed to eat in the Passover. Now, you know why? All right. Thank you. You're done. I did a children's sermon at the high school down in Racine. And the kids, I had three boys, which I made a mistake. But I said, now you're God and you're the devil. Now pretend you're going to go to war. And they ran around the gym. They broke loose. I go, well, got to lose a little control once in a while. Anyway, in the sermon tonight, we're going to be talking about why Jesus picked these things. Because kids like you, as they were growing up, they would have this very special meal. And they would taste a little bit of that bitter over and they'll go, oh, I don't like this, and they'd put it on the plate a little bit. Or sometimes they liked the lamb, and they would eat the lamb. And sometimes they liked the unleavened bread because they used to call it sweet bread, because the other was kind of a sourdough bread because it had the yeast in it. And the yeast was natural yeast, not the kind that we get in the little packages. And so when we got through all of this, even the littlest kid got to drink a little bit of the wine. Now, we're going to learn about how Jesus took this same meal that you're eating and he put it together in what we call communion today. Because when we do communion, there's unleavened bread and wine. We don't serve the bitter herbs because Jesus didn't tell us to. And we don't serve the lamb anymore because he said, take and eat this bread. That's the lamb that represents that for us to understand. So in my sermon today, I want you to listen. I'm going to be trying to explain to the moms and dads, the big people, what God was doing. And this was a very important meal. In other words, I would never spit it out because God said, this is really important. Now, you didn't know that yet because nobody taught you that, so it's perfectly okay. But he said, I want you to remember that I saved you. And so for the people that were Jews, they remembered on the Passover that when the lamb was killed, they saved the lamb's blood and they put it on the door, top the door, and down the sides. And then the whole family went into the house. If they would have come out of the house, they would have died. And that night, the Lord took care of taking all the Egyptians and telling them, you better let the Israelites go. And that was the first night the Israelites were free in about 200 years. They'd been in Egypt for about 400. but they'd been slaves for 200 years. So that's what we're going to try and learn tonight, and how important and significant this is. I'm glad you at least tried. I now have something you'll probably like a little better, unless you don't like sugar. Oh, you'll like sugar. All right. Well, ladies first. You each get one.
I don't get one.
You don't get one? Okay. Here's some more, as long as you're cleaning up for me. Yeah. Hurry up. 5, 4, 3, 2 and a half. No, just one. Okay. Make a decision. Good job. Oh, thank you. Thank you. The discipline of the Lord. I want to read you three sections. They all come together. They all have meaning. They're all interrelated. And I want to see if you can pick them out and understand them. The first one comes up there from Genesis 22, verses 6 and 7. You want me to talk louder?
No, you can talk
quieter. Oh, I thought you said you can't hear. Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering, placed it on his son, Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife. As the two of them went together, Isaac spoke up and said to his father, to Abraham, "Father, yes, my son, the fire and the wood are here," Isaac said, "but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" Hang in there with me. The second one comes out of this section up there, if you look at it, in Exodus chapter 12, 15. "For 7 days you are to eat bread made without yeast. On the first day, remove the yeast from your house. For whoever eats anything with yeast in it from the first day through the seventh must be cut off from Israel." Next one comes up there from Corinthians 11:27. If you look at this little section. "Therefore, whoever eats the bread or drinks the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty of sinning against the body and the blood of the Lord. A man ought to examine himself." I'm going a little farther, but you can follow with me. "A man ought to examine himself before he eats of the bread, drinks of the cup. For anyone who eats and drinks without recognizing the body of the Lord eats and drinks judgment on himself." These were not accidental verses. This is serious, serious stuff to the Lord. There are people who think you can take graham crackers and milk. There are people who think you can use any kind of bread you want. There are people who don't understand the intensity with which God set up the Passover meal and didn't ask, "Bruce, do you like the taste of cilantro? Or do you like the taste of arugula? Or some of the other things that were the greens or the bitters that would have been part of that meal? Or would you prefer the lamb boiled or cooked some other way rather than roasted or grilled, as we would normally kind of call it?" You understand? He put this meal together, including the unleavened bread. Now, the people who first experienced the Passover had no concept of the significance of that night. They were eating the bread, drinking the wine. They were participating in the meal. They had to be ready to leave. So they had their shoes on, they had their coats on, they had their staff in hand, and they ate standing up, ready to leave. That's the way the Lord told them to eat the meal. Now, a lot of stuff over the centuries has been added by the Jews and by other commentaries and different things, But the purest, simple meal that is known as the Passover has those four elements in it. And in that, the wine would then be used to wash down. By the time we got a little bit later to the Seder meal, which is the one Jesus is celebrating a little bit more with his disciples, when he took the third cup of wine, the cup of wine after supper, if you listen carefully what I read to you, when they had eaten, he took the cup and he said, drink from it, all of you. That's why in communion, the traditional way is one cup shared to be significant, because we all drink of the one cup, reminding us of the unity that we are supposed to have as the body of Christ. Now, you can say whatever you want to say about comfortability or uncomfortability with doing that, but at least understand the significance of it. So here the family is, and depending upon the size of the family, they would either take a portion of a lamb and share it with other families or bring another family in to share with them, but they would all have to stay in the house until they got the word from Moses, we're leaving and we're leaving now. Now, they had no conception of the significance of the meal they were eating. This was the last meal they ate as slaves, and the first meal they ate as free people. Because in that moment, they were going to be set free from the condition of slavery that the Egyptians had held them in for so many years, and they were going to become no longer slaves, but they were going to become the people of God, the Israelites, the Jewish nation. That is that moment. This is their birthday meal. This is the meal that is supposed to be that significant to them. This is the meal you don't kid around with. This is the meal with absolute seriousness. It's the meal where every firstborn, no matter how young or old you were, remember, firstborn, male or female, Jew and or Egyptian, would have died. And the only way they were preserved was by taking the blood of the lamb that had given its life for them, and they took that blood, spreading it on the doorpost and lintel, and they devoured, took in the very lamb itself, and that was going to be the meal that sustained them as they began their walk away from Egypt and their walk into freedom. And so we get to see that because we get to step back and look at it 1,000, 2,000 plus years away from it, and we begin to understand the significance of it. But you have to recognize, as these people began to walk away, hearing the screaming and the death all around them of the firstborn child, whether it was the mother, the father, or the firstborn child in the family, they would all be dead. And so you begin to understand, this is intense. This is serious stuff to God. This is not, let's play games, let's just use some jelly on the doorposts and lintel. Nothing has to really die. And if you know anything about this, the reason I didn't mention that it was the lamb is that sometimes we picture that tender little lamb, and you'd have to keep that lamb for 4 days. You gathered it, you collected it, you bought it on the 10th. You sacrificed it on the 14th. The 14th is tonight. The Maundy Thursday would have been the equivalent. The Maundy Thursday, and that was the night they had to butcher the lamb. And they had to collect the blood. There was no hiding this from little ones. There was no, let's not let them see us kill the lamb. The blood was there. It was spread in the doorpost and lintel. The flesh had to be roasted. Those are all the things that the kids, the big adults, and it says, this is a memorial for you and for your children. Now, the day itself is the memorial. How the memorial is going to be expressed is the ordinance, the command. And so you begin to understand, it becomes absolutely intense. God is not wasting words saying unleavened bread. How would you like the assignment last Sunday to be? I want you to go into your house and throw every single thing from the freezer, any part of your house, throw everything you have that has any yeast in it away, any leavening. Purify your house. And you go, why are we doing that? Because the opposite would be what you're really supposed to be doing spiritually. Go through your house, throw every CD, DVD, book, anything that leads your mind or your heart astray. Purify your house. Empty the closets. Throw out the boxes. Anything that doesn't belong in your house. That was the significance of getting all the yeast out of your house. And so even as they're doing that, they're not fully comprehending the significance of it, but they're being faithful and they're being obedient. And here's the bad part. If any of those Jews didn't do what they were told, their firstborn in their families was dead. This is not a game to God. It's absolutely intense. Now, did you notice I read to you the account of Abraham and Isaac? And God said to Abraham, I want to test you now. I want you to take your son, go to the mount where I tell you, and sacrifice your son on that mountain. And in that moment, we read as it comes along that Abraham had loaded the donkey and had a few carriers with him for a while. He sent those young men away, and he put the wood on his son. In the Jewish commentaries, it's referring to the Messiah. Jesus carried his cross. When they got there, in one of the commentaries, it said, Isaac said, Father, because it does say Abraham bound him hand and foot. He said, Father, tie it tight. Because he said, I don't want to jerk and break a single bone in my body. Because if I break one bone, I would no longer be an unblemished, worthy sacrifice. And so into this setting now, you have the entire ministry that is going to be repeated in Passover, that is going to be obviously demonstrated in the sacrifice of Christ on the cross. And ultimately, we begin to understand, even as we share communion together, that it's meant to take us back in understanding the significance of what God said. So as he gets ready to sacrifice Isaac, the Lord calls out to him and tells Abraham, stop. And he says, now I know you love me. And it sounds strange at first, but when Isaac said, who's and where are we going to get the lamb from? Abraham said to Isaac, the Lord will supply the lamb. And when they looked up after Isaac got off the altar, they saw a ram in the thicket that was caught in there, and they used that as the sacrifice. And they burned the ram. In the Passover, if they couldn't eat all the lamb, and every bit of the lamb was roasted, from head all the way down to tail, entrails, everything was roasted. Whatever was not eaten was burned that night. It was not allowed to be left overnight because the night is sacred, and it wasn't going to be on then left over the next day. The same way they took Jesus' body off the cross, making sure that not one single bone had been broken, because those are all part of the fulfillments that bring these events together. And only as you start to read them and understand and research them do you begin to understand the significance of what's really going on. So finally, we get to that little section I read to you, which we're going to repeat when I consecrate the elements. We got Jesus actually speaking about his body, his blood, and it's saving you, and you eating it, and you drinking it, because that's what he's asking you to do. And he adds the intensity that I read for you out of that chapter in 1 Corinthians, that if you fail to discern the body and blood of the Lord, you eat and drink judgment upon yourself. It's serious. It's one of the reasons you have to make sure whoever is coming to take and partake knows what they're doing, understands what they're receiving, recognizes the significance of it. Now, it isn't that God is out there trying to be mean. He's trying to create the sensitivity, the respect, and the honor of the meal itself, helping us to understand that. So when it comes to the Passover, Jesus is celebrating the Passover with his disciples. He uses the unleavened bread, and he breaks it, and he distributes it, and calls it his body. Then after the meal was over, the first cup of wine they have after the meal, and the little kids would get a little smaller than a shot glass, but the wine was the only flavoring they had, and sometimes they would even mix it with water so kids could drink it like Kool-Aid. And you begin to understand that that was that part of that. And then they would actually partake of that wine, and that would have been that meal, the wine or the third cup of redemption. To redeem means to buy you out of slavery. It was a memorial to remind the slaves, I came and I brought you by my power alone out of your condition of slavery. I rescued you out of Egypt. You did nothing but walk out after I set everything in motion and I took you across the Red Sea, where it talks about crossing the Red Sea in the baptism. It's the work of God. In 1 Corinthians, it talks about that work in the cloud and in the sea. The children of Israel were baptized and brought on the other side, and they were fed the special way that God fed them in supernatural bread in the wilderness, manna, manhu, as it was called in Hebrew. What's this? It's the manna. It's the supernatural bread that God supplied to the children of Israel. Now you begin to put these all together and you begin to understand when the people experienced it firsthand, all Abraham knew was he was taking his son to sacrifice him. We read in Romans that he was aware that God could raise him back up. He was confident that God was in control, but he was going to sacrifice his son. That was going to be the result of that walking that Abraham was doing with Isaac. And that test was more for Abraham than for God, because it demonstrated to Abraham, I am willing to be obedient to you, God, in everything and all things. When it came to the Passover, it was serious. People were going to die that night. There was going to be a grieving across the nation that would make any nation drop to its knees with the sadness of what that must be. You want to raise your hand if you're a firstborn? Raise your hand. I'm a firstborn. Firstborn, anybody, there you go. Tomorrow you'll all be dead. You begin to go, wait, this is a pretty significant sermon then, isn't it? Unless, you understand? And you begin to understand the people were understanding their walk with God is not just warm and fuzzy. It is serious stuff. It is God working out the love of his people, demonstrating to them that everybody knew that God made Israel a nation. God rescued the Jews from Egypt. They did not save themselves. They were the ones saved by the mercy and the grace and the calling of God. And you begin to understand why that meal becomes so significant. It will remind you that I saved you. It will remind you that I took you from your condition of slavery and death and victim of sin. I set you free. You walk now as a free man and you walk as a free woman. That's the nature of that very event. And then you bring it straight forward and you put those two things together, and Christ marries them in a sense as he creates and reestablishes the new meal. The meal that, while it has some of the same components, does not require any further bloodshed, because one lamb is sacrificed. One person has to die. One person pays the price. One person demonstrates the pure unleavened bread. Your bread is never unleavened. It may be without yeast, but the truth is, the only unleavened bread at that meal was Jesus himself. Take and eat. This is my body. This is the bread you need to eat. This is my blood. This is the wine, the blood you need to drink. And although within the framework of that, there are things we can't fully comprehend and understand, yet in the middle of it, we begin to understand the significance of what God is doing in this Maundy Thursday Passover event, which takes us into communion in the New Testament. And so when God sits there and says, you better recognize what you're eating and drinking, he's not doing it to be mean. He's doing it because don't get this messed up. We rescued ourselves from Egypt. We showed old Pharaoh we're really a good people. And as soon as they forgot that, God had to bring judgment into their lives. Why do I teach that to my children? So my children don't walk around thinking arrogantly they deserve the freedom they've got. What's your memorial event that reminds them that men and women and children died in order to make this country free, or this land free, or the brothers and sisters who were put to death because of their faith in Jesus Christ, but were willing to pay the price over the generations to come over to a country and reestablish a free nation where you could worship? Do your kids have the same intensity that the freedom is not theirs? It was given to them, won for them, because then you understand the miracle of the Passover, the miracle that takes us all the way back to Abraham and Isaac, where the sacrifice was supplied by God, where the Messiah is supplied by God, where the people of the church are set free, and we, as often as we eat and we drink, are meant to remember those very points that God's establishing here in that meal. And so we put that together in Maundy Thursday, and we begin to understand God's significance of all of these things coming together. And it's such a tender thing. It isn't God trying to be mean. It's God going, teach this to your kids, because otherwise they get puffed up and arrogant. They think somehow they deserve a cell phone. They deserve to eat. They deserve a safe roof over their house. Like somehow they're better than the rest of the world that's suffering or being bombed or being attacked. That somehow they don't owe God anything. And they get to that point where even if I understand the significance of the mercy of God, if my children don't, I've failed to do the very thing God said to you and to your children. This is what he's called us to do. Teach them, which is nothing more than the gospel. I died for you. I saved you. My holiness, my righteousness, my unblemished record is now given to you. You participate in it. You receive the benefits of it, which is salvation and rescue out of the Egypts that you and I are in. And so we begin to understand. That's why it uses those words. You have been redeemed, bought back, bought out of slavery by the precious blood of the Lord Jesus Christ. And we have to make sure that whether it's on Maundy Thursday or any other time, that we ourselves remember it and our children and our children's children remember it. So pray with me if you would. Lord, what a miracle. What an unbelievable work of your word, of your spirit, as you put together events hundreds of years, thousands of years apart, and yet at the same time the message remains faithful. You are the rescuer. You are the redeemer. You bought me out of slavery. You bought me out of certain death. You bought me out of damnation and hell. And I did nothing. I deserved nothing. But in your mercy and grace, covered by your blood, I have been rescued. And I ask, Lord, that you would give your grace to all of us here tonight. Pray this in your name. I'm reminded of a story I want to share. It's about a soldier, I believe it was in the Second World War, and his spot was overrun, and most everybody around him had been shot and killed, and the enemy came running over the spot and just kept on going, and different people were getting poked and jabbed and shot by the enemy as they ran through these piles of dead bodies of dead soldiers all around him. And finally, after everything settled down later that evening, he crawled out from under one of the bodies of one of the soldiers that had been dead. And he managed to make it back to his lines, and they asked him, "How in the world did you get rescued? Did you get saved? Did you make it back here?" And he said, "I was covered by the blood of another person." And I thought, even though it's a little bit of a gory example, it's a perfect example of covered by the blood of Jesus Christ. As we get ready for